In the first of our four-part series, After the Verdict, I'm speaking with dominatrix Ciara Lynch, or humiliatrix, as dictated by her particular brand of domination. She answers general questions about her career and the life she leads. And afterward, I'm going to read two thought-provoking emails I've received. One from a previous escort, with unique insight into BDSM, and her surprising agreement with the character of Carl. The other is from a member of the press. And now, humiliatrix, Ciara Lynch. So, Ciara, what is your occupation?
My occupation is I am a humiliatrix.
And what is that?
A humiliatrix is someone who humiliates men for a living. So it's kind of like a dominatrix, but instead of using whips and chains, I use my words.
Oh, so is that the only difference? It's more verbally oriented than actionally?
Correct. I don't meet any of my clients in person. I just do everything online. So it's videos, webcam, over the phone, that sort of thing.
Okay, great. How did you get started in this line of work?
When I was 17 years old, I was an exchange student in Japan, and I was very bored and very lonely a lot of the times because I didn't speak the language. So I spent a lot of time online, and I would talk to my friends, and I would also talk to just random people. One of those random people was a guy who had a crush on me, I suppose. He was a big pervert, and he had a fetish for getting peed on and a fetish for women's pantyhose. So I found this fascinating, disgusting, intriguing.
All of the above.
I didn't see the harm in talking to him, though, because it was just online. So we talked periodically, and he would often try to get me to meet him. But I had zero interest in doing that, so I always turned him down. And so one day he was like, okay, well, I know you're not going to meet me, but I really think that your piss should be bottled and sold. So I said, okay, well, you should buy it then. And I thought he was just talking, bluffing. But I figured, well, what do I have to lose here? So we made an arrangement. I sent him a bottle, 12-ounce bottle of my urine, and he mailed me back $250. And that's how it all started. From there, I was like, well, there has to be more guys like this out there. And I figured out how to sell my used underwear, my socks online, and pretty much anything I'm wearing or spitting out of my mouth or coming out of whatever orifice, something that I was able to package and sell. And I would always, you know, see what other girls were doing online. And that's how I figured out how to set up my own phone lines. And since, you know, I came into the adult industry in this fetish way, not, you know, kind of the typical vanilla way, all the guys that talked to me were submissive and they just wanted to be berated and talked down to. So that's how I kind of started as a femdom. And from there I did webcam and then videos, and now I do all the above.
Do you find that humiliating men comes easily to you, or was that a skill that you had to learn and practice and that evolved?
Yeah, it was a skill I had to practice for sure.
Yeah. What does an average work day look like to you?
It's hard to say. I don't know that I have an average work day because I do so many different things. It's not like I keep have a pattern or keep kind of a regular schedule. Sometimes I'm filming videos. Sometimes I'm on webcam. Sometimes I'm on phone. Sometimes I'm taking a long break from one of those three things. You know, like for instance, I still like sell my underwear and stuff, but I haven't done it in months, but I'll probably do some next couple weeks. So, you know, it's, I suppose since videos are kind of my bread and butter, I'm usually making videos. So I'm usually getting dressed up, setting up the camera on a tripod, performing in front of it, shooting like, I don't know, like maybe like four or five videos. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll jump on webcam. I don't know. It just depends on what I feel like doing that day.
Yeah, it could be anything.
Yeah.
The show Deliberations talks a lot about the psyche of male submissives. And mm-hmm. so I'm wondering, like, you as a person with more experience in that regard than most, do you feel that the male submissive psyche is relatively extreme in your line of work, or what sort of humiliation do men typically want?
There really is no typical. I mean, there's a huge variety. The only thing my clients have in common is that they, I mean, even this isn't necessarily true. Like they all like dominant women. Like that's maybe the only common thread. Other than that, it really varies. Like some guys only like a more seductive kind of domination. Some guys like, you know, some guys just like feet, and like that in of itself, like worshiping a girl's feet is you know, an act of submission to them. Some guys are more extreme. Some guys want me to go real dark and talk about, you know, blackmailing them or ruining their lives or cutting off their dick or killing them. Like, so
really, have you had men that wanted you to talk in terms of a fantasy about killing them?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Really? Was that a specific fantasy or just general?
Well, I've done videos before. One of my best-selling videos of all time was a video called Die For Me. And it was a video where I was seducing. So maybe I should back up because I didn't really specify this. So all my videos are point of view. So it's just me. I set up the camera and I'm talking to the camera so the viewer feels like I'm talking directly to him. So in this video, same thing. I'm talking to the camera. And basically the premise is I am seducing the viewer. And, you know, I am this goddess, this like, you know, dominant woman that he worships and would do anything for. And I make a deal with him that he gets to kiss me, but only if he dies immediately afterwards. So the idea is like, you know, a kiss from me is so valuable and like amazing that it's worth his life. And that was one of my best-selling clips of all time. Wow. I mean, I've done other videos with like pretty dark verbal humiliation where, you know, I'm telling them that they should kill themselves and that like no one loves them and pretty dark stuff.
Right.
Yeah, some guys are into that. Definitely.
Yeah. Would you say it's a pretty minor percentage of your clientele that are into the very dark extreme, or is that more of general?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I wouldn't say it's a majority or even half. It's a fairly small percentage. I think even like the video I described for you, the Die For Me, was more of a like a femme fatale kind of fantasy than a, you know, death fantasy.
Right.
So it's fairly rare.
I had a call recently with Texture, and I have to say, I was pretty moved by the passion and enthusiasm they all genuinely had for Texture and for magazines. Texture is a magazine app that gives you access to over 200 great magazines like Time and People and The New Yorker and Vogue, all the ones. Lately, I've been reading magazines with my coffee as soon as I wake up and in bed right before I go to sleep because I can relax deeper with a magazine than anything else. The moment I open my eyes, I don't want the harsh realities of my news app or to crack the spine of Madame Bovary. I want a goddamn magazine. And the more I thought about magazines for this spot, the more I started realizing that often the yummiest times of my life are spent with a magazine. Being on a beach or getting on a plane, the stuff I associate with my happiest moments, magazine moments. I really like Texture. It gives you over 200 amazing magazines and their back issues, and it's searchable, FYI, so you can mark what you like, check back issues, and search for topics, which I think is really cool, and I haven't seen that before. I don't know. I really like it. And you can try it for free right now and support this show while you're doing it. Go to texture.com/deliberations and get the free trial. If you like it and you want to keep it, it goes to $9.99 a month for podcast listeners, which is over 30% less than their listed price. And personally, that's less than I was spending on print magazines. Also, just saying, they have great gift options, which comes in handy if you need a last minute or immediate but meaningful gift for somebody. You know those moments. Go to texture.com/deliberations to start your free trial. Please try it today and help support this show. It helps a lot. Thank you. Is your persona as a humiliatrix purely character of invention, or are there aspects of that character that are the real you?
I think my character is an exaggerated version of my bitchy side, which, I mean, you know, it exists in everyone, right? So, yeah. I mean, it's acting in the sense that I think most actors act, you know, they like if they're in a scene where they're crying, like they're trying to think of something that maybe really upset them and they're really trying to tap into those emotions. So it's not completely fabricated, but yeah, it's hyperbole.
Right. How does this work impact your personal romantic relationships? Like, are you dominant in your personal romantic relationships as well?
No.
No.
No, it's separate from my romantic life.
Okay. Has it ever, your work as a humiliatrix, dominatrix, femdom, what do you prefer to be called, by the way?
Humiliatrix.
Humiliatrix.
Yeah.
Does your work as a humiliatrix, has that ever negatively impacted your romantic relationships?
Never.
Never. Okay.
That's never been an issue.
That's awesome. And do you ever, in terms of the public or friends or family, have you ever faced judgment because of what it is you do?
I mean, probably, but everyone's like nice to your face, you know. If people are judging me, they're not knowing me. And if they are, I don't think there are anyone that's relatively close to me. Okay. They're probably people I don't know that well. Both my parents know, they're supportive. My sister knows, she doesn't care. All my friends are cool with it. I mean, most of my friends are also in the industry as well. But even the ones that aren't, like, you know, unfazed by it. I mean, I think you get to a point where, you know, you kind of have to weed those sort of people out. You know, you don't want to surround yourself with people that, you know, think badly of you, especially something like this.
Right. When you told your parents, was that something they had to sort of acclimate to, or were they immediately accepting?
It was different for both my mom and my dad. I ended up telling my dad because he knew I was doing something, because I was clearly making a lot of money. You know, it's like buying a nice car and living in a nice apartment. And I could tell that he thought it was something worse than it was. Mm-hmm. Thought I was like dealing drugs or like, you know, some like streetwalker in an alleyway or something like that. Right. So I was like, okay, well, what, you know, he's a dad, of course, he's going to think worst case scenario. So I was like, all right, well, whatever he's thinking, like, this isn't as bad. And so I explained it to him and I'm like, you know, look, I humiliate men on the internet for a living. You know, I don't meet anyone. I don't touch anyone. I'm not taking off my clothes. They're just guys with weird fetishes. And like, I just, you know, I cater to them. And he immediately thought it was genius. Like, he's just like, that's amazing. But it was so cool. So he's always been supportive. Like, he just thinks it's awesome. My mom, I told, and she was, she didn't have a bad reaction, but she didn't have like an enthusiastic reaction either. She was just like, okay. And that was about it. And then we just never talked about it for a really, really long time. And from what I know of my mom, like, I think, well, she's just a little bit more of a reserved person. She doesn't like to talk about things that make her uncomfortable. I don't think she like disapproved necessarily. I think if anything, she was just concerned for my safety. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't talk about it for a long time until, I'm working on a documentary / feature film right now. And she saw like the trailer for it and she's just like, wait, they're making a movie of you? So like after like 10 years of me like first telling her, we finally started talking about it again. And it was a cool conversation. She was like, And you're just like, yeah, I know, maybe it's kind of weird we never talk about it, but, you know, I want to, but I never feel like there's the right time. And so it was a nice conversation.
That's good. That's really good. Is the documentary about you and your work?
Yeah, it's a, yes, it's an erotic thriller, basically. So it's a hybrid documentary. So there's a lot, mostly real documentary footage in it, but there's also a fictional storyline kind of woven within it. But yeah, it's about me and my work and the director that kind of gets involved and gets in over his head and things kind of spin out of control.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you if life was difficult for you and or your clients because of your sexually alternative lifestyles. It doesn't sound like your life is negatively impacted at all, but are you aware of life being difficult or problematic for your clients because of their fetishes or predilections?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I talk to a wide variety of guys. So, I mean, this isn't going to be the story for everyone. A lot of guys, like, whatever, it's just the porn they watch and it's their kink and that's fine. And, but it is difficult for a lot of guys because, you know, men aren't supposed to be submissive. So that's something that's going to be difficult to come to terms with, especially if, you know, you're living in a, you know, a machismo kind of country or a very conservative kind of country. And it's difficult if, you know, you're married and you like can't fathom like telling your wife because you know that she'll judge you or leave you or it just wouldn't go well. So there's a lot of guys that, you know, it's their secret and no one else really knows about it. And I think that's hard. I think it's, you know, kind of like living a double life in a way. So, yeah, it's difficult. And a lot of guys, like, if they have anger issues, that could be even worse because, you know, you get a guy who, you know, a guy who contacts me, he likes this thing. He doesn't want to like what he likes, but he likes it when he's turned on. And then after he ejaculates, then he's mad at me. Like I did something to him. So, that doesn't happen too often, but, yeah, it's not a good recipe for a guy that has these kind of fetish and anger issues, like unresolved issues to work out.
No, that sounds fraught.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes me glad that you're conducting this kind of work online, actually.
Yeah.
Knowing that there are clients that can, like, turn to anger.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, honestly, I could count on one hand probably the number of times, like, again, I'm like, all right, whatever, block, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it's out there, you know, it's, I don't want to say that I certainly don't want to correlate the two, like, oh, you know, there's lots of guys with anger issues with these fetishes. Cause there's not, it's definitely the, something that's rare, but just the fact that I talk to so many guys, like naturally there's going to be some assholes out there.
Right. So how many, I know it must be probably impossible to judge, but if you had to say the number of submissive men that you've worked with in terms mm-hmm. of their quantity, would you say that's in the dozens or hundreds or thousands range? Like, do you have any?
Like how many clients I've dealt with?
Yes.
Oh, geez. I mean, I guess it depends on what you're talking about. Cause like I sell videos, so, right. You know,
that might not count. Well, what about like submissive men that you have,
like one-on-one interactions with, like live,
right,
like on the phone or webcam or that sort of thing. Oh gosh. I mean, I've been doing this over 10 years now. So, I mean, it's in the thousands at least.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's not an unpopular fetish.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not mainstream. You know, you go on Pornhub, you're not going to see a lot of like dominatrix videos, you know, typically, because most guys like the opposite, you know, they like, you know, submissive women in their porn. So it's definitely not the majority, but
is that your understanding that most men prefer submissive women than the other way around?
I think so. I think that's what porn shows and, you know, they're just trying to make money. So, you know, if you see what's popular, that must be what guys like.
Right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with all of us. It was really educational for me. And I'm hopeful that it will be educational for the entire audience, if people want to learn more about you or follow you online or, you know, learn more in general, how can they do that?
Well, my name is Ciara Lynch, so it's C-E-A-R-A-L-Y-N-C-H, and you can find me at ciaralynch.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, Ciara Lynch, or Instagram, Ciara Lynch, or just Google Ciara Lynch, and you'll find everything else on there, too.
Awesome. Well, I encourage everyone to do that, and I'm also very excited to see the documentary based on you, or possibly starring you, when it comes out.
Yes. Yep, yep. It's called Ruin Me, so you can find that at ruinmefilm.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, that sounds fantastic. Ciara, thank you so much. And if at all possible, I hope to talk to you again one time.
All right, cool. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks to Ciara Lynch for opening the curtain to her intriguing lifestyle. As promised, I received a couple very interesting emails this week, and I'm sharing abridged versions of them here. I'm withholding their names for the time being, but I'd love to credit them if they're amenable. The first. Hello. I'm not a lifestyle practitioner of BDSM. However, I have been an escort who specialized in domination such as wrestling, emotional humiliation, sounding rods, and breath play. Non-professionally, I've always had a submissive nature regarding sexual proclivities. I share some of the proclivities of my previous clients, and as such, I believe I had better insight into consensual kink. I foremost agree with Carl's sentiments regarding deliberations. Despite his clear discomfort regarding the subject matter, I do believe his ability to be neutral is apparent. Personality is not the same as morality, and I do agree that the possible abusive aspects of Samantha and Troy's relationship are in the evidence they've been provided with. While every relationship is different, I believe that disregarding the negative and uncomfortable signs of the relationship and eventual death as, quote-unquote, lifestyle undermines the culpability of power dynamics. Samantha and Troy's otherness should not be used as an excuse for lack of ownership in the resulting death, just as much as it should not be used as a determining factor of guilt. So I received this email, and I'm grateful that I did. Thank you to this thoughtful writer. I have to admit, I didn't consider the relationship dynamic between Samantha and Troy to be abusive, but this email makes me think again. Particularly the line, quote, I believe that disregarding the negative and uncomfortable signs of the relationship as lifestyle undermines the culpability of power dynamics. So... Is the power dynamic itself culpable? I don't know, but I've been chewing on that. The second email is from a member of the press, and it opened my eyes to an uncomfortable way I may have presented things on this podcast. The following is an abridged version. Hello. Your dramatic take on courtroom dynamics, sexual politics, and the humanity of crime is emotionally rich and thought-provoking, but in a portrayal this nuanced, one major player stands out to me as being unduly vilified, the press. It's easy to bash the media nowadays. Journalists, like myself, are usually among the first to do so. However, in today's political climate, I think it's important that we draw a distinction between bad reporting and reporting someone doesn't like. Journalists and lawyers have a surprising amount in common. Both of our roles are inherently adversarial, often with each other, and people tend not to be too thrilled when we show up. At our best, we both seek the truth, ask the tough questions, and tell stories that serve our respective aims. Lawyers tell the stories that best suit their case. Journalists strive to tell the best of approximation of what they believe to be the truth. That involves gathering multiple perspectives, sorting through the contradictory information, and condensing it into a cohesive, engaging, and accurate narrative under severe constraints of time and space. I think any lawyer would agree that open courts are one of the hallmarks of a democratic society and necessary to ensure public confidence in the criminal justice system. In the face of near constant attacks on our professions, I feel like journalists must defend the role of a free and independent press, because God knows no one else will. This email struck me deeply because current political realities have created a distrust of the press that is unwarranted and dangerous. I in no way want a project of mine to cast greater doubt on an industry as difficult and important as the American press. The writer of this email was extremely respectful and understanding of Jessa Nicholson's perspectives on crime reporting, and I know Jessa Nicholson greatly values our free press. I'm proud to bring such deep and thoughtful perspectives together in this forum. The best way to deepen understanding is to engage in informed and courteous discourse like this. Again, thank you to the writers of these emails. I'd like to credit you or allow you to remain in anonymity, as you wish. On next week's episode, we're speaking to the actress who played Samantha Hall, Michaela Fleming, about her thesis exploring a BDSM relationship she experienced with an asexual individual. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in next week.